Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to the Bird Calls podcast, dedicated to SB Nation's TheBirdRights.com. My name is Preston Ellis, and today we are talking the Ochsner scandals and Frank Jackson. We'll touch on that at the end. Joining me is all-around knucklehead and Bird Rights contributor Travis Tate. What's up, Trav?
Hey, how you doing, Preston? Thanks for having me again.
Dude, I love having you. Come on all the time. And we've got Commander-in-Chief, the man who would not be moved, Ollie Cassell. What's up, boss?
Hey, Preston. How you doing, man? Good to finally join you on a podcast with Travis. You guys always have such a good time. I just wanted to join in.
Travis is the worst, man. We're going to have to keep him from bullying me. That's why I brought you on today.
So Ollie is much more the sweetheart. Maybe me and Ollie will take over and we'll kick you out, Preston. What about that?
Oh, but I'm in control of the recording devices. You can't.
No!
If you ever figure out how to, I'll be in deep trouble. Right. But right now, I think Ollie is the only one privy to that information. You guys, let's get into it. As always, you can follow these guys at Trebeta and at Red Hopeful. We won't talk about where Trebeta came from this episode. Maybe we'll touch on it the next one again. But you guys, I'm going to talk for a minute, so just sit back, relax, just take in my voice. On July 26th, the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans, along with partner Ochsner Health System, announced that they had agreed to a long-term partnership. It was 8 years for the naming rights to the team's official training facilities. Now officially known as the Ochsner Sports Performance Center, it's the only facility in all of North America that houses both an NFL training and NBA training facility. And Tom Benson was quoted as saying, "This is a very special announcement for us. Ochsner has been a great partner for a long time." And I really want to touch on this one next. The naming signals a commitment from Ochsner, the New Orleans Saints, and the New Orleans Pelicans to use the Ochsner Sports Performance Center to improve health and wellness across the state. That was President and CEO Warner Thomas. And then Saints and Pelicans president Dennett Lauschka, I think, stated, "Ochsner's innovative, forward-thinking, patient-first medical teams and facilities are unsurpassed, and their focus on not only treating but also preventing injuries will translate into a very beneficial partnership." Okay, let's talk credentials. Derek Jones is the section head of sports medicine and cartilage restoration at the Ochsner Sports Medical Institute. And Misty Suri, where did I have that? He is a fellowship-trained sports medicine orthopedic surgeon. He is a surgeon, clinician, educator, and researcher. He is currently a team physician for the Saints, the Pelicans, UNO, Dillard, Delgado, Sudo, Xavier, as well as several high schools. Ali, the ink has not been dried on the agreement between these two major businesses made less than 1 month ago. The Ochsner logo now litters the Saints and Pelicans training facilities. How bad does this look on both companies from a business perspective?
It looks horrible. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat this, Preston. My first reaction when I heard the news, I really wanted to like almost join all the naysayers and, hey, look, here's our proof. Look at this. Remember all those injuries we've seen over the years? Yeah. Hey, guess what? These doctors don't know what the hell they're doing. But you know what? That's the wrong take. And it's funny that I would say it because I've usually been at the forefront of, you know, kind of giving the organization a hard time for having an inadequate healthcare and facilities and all and such. But it, as you said, Preston, it's not a good look. But you know what? It's not the end of the world. Because if once we start talking about it and the evidence, we start talking about how Keenan Lewis, how he's like a big part of this, and it's revealed that his main thing was he was after Derek Jones. His problem was not with Misty Suri. And as you said, Misty Suri had a lot of good things said about him from last year, which was really wasn't it his first year with the Pelicans as he was the team physician. So you can't really just say what happened to the Saints with this one injury, the Delvin Brew, and suddenly have it encompass all the Pelicans injury woes over the last, you know, God, 5, 6, 7 years. I don't know how far back you want to take it, because Misty Sturry wasn't there. So really, we were only allowed to start judging him and the Pelicans' decision to keep him since he joined the force. So, yeah, even though it's an easy thing to all of a sudden nitpick, once you look at the facts, you can't do it. You know, Misty Sturry's been there a year. He's done a good job. So I'll turn it over to Travis. I've got a lot more to say, but, yeah, I want to see what Travis has on this.
Well, I just have any sort of problem criticizing a team's medical staff, just because that's not anything that anybody could possibly, like, accurately critique, because unless you're like an actual doctor and you know these very specific points of a person's injury, like the Delvin Bro situation, like, we didn't look at the original x-rays, we're not doctors. Like, there's so much unknown there that I really don't like criticizing the medical staff. And like, I have a hard time seeing or thinking that the New Orleans medical staff is somehow dumber or worse than the San Diego Chargers or the Chicago Bears or anyone else. Like, I don't even know how you rank those things accurately, but it's definitely not a good look what's going on right now with that Bro situation. And it's unfortunate because it also makes their business side look a little sloppy or maybe incompetent, just having this happen so close to that agreement that you mentioned, Preston, that just, you know, that just took effect last month.
Yeah, a bunch of people have come out, including, like you said, Keenan Lewis, Chris Chamberlain, talking about potentially this is a reason why New Orleans has not become a free agency destination, because they don't take care of their players. Let's dive into exactly what happened. Delvin Bro shockingly came up in trade rumors just over a week ago after head coach Sean Payton became impatient with his recovery process. Payton is not one to be patient with injuries, as evidenced by a history of publicly shaming players for not practicing, like Keenan Lewis, Pierre Thomas, and the abrupt cutting of Daniel Ellerbe just this season. That took place just a month ago, you know, when we're still several weeks away from the regular season. And Payton did not deny these rumors, you know, but why the rush? It's merely preseason. Payton became so frustrated with the Saints' number one corner in a position where the Saints desperately needed talent that he demoted him to third on the depth chart, floated his name in talks. He was commented as saying, we would never comment if we were to begin with, and it rarely works that way. It's very normal throughout training camp for teams to discuss different players and possible trades. I wouldn't comment on that. That would be club business. But upon learning of the misdiagnosis, Payton was quoted, for years these guys have done a great job, and yet there was a point at which we just felt as an organization that change was going to be necessary for us. We'll be in the process of going through different candidates. Travis, was this a knee-jerk reaction by a man trying to cover his own image after embarrassing an athlete for sitting on the sidelines with a broken leg? Or do you believe the Pelicans and the Saints just signed an 8-year contract with, like you said, a hospital that produces bad doctors?
I think it's, well, I don't want to say that they produce bad doctors. Again, that's that comment that I would stay away from. But it is a little bit of that first statement that you made, which is it's a nice piece of analysis you've done there, where you can say, well, and football is so much different from basketball. Like, everybody is so much more quick to essentially just give up on players or get rid of players as soon as they think that they're at all injury prone. I mean, I think if basketball were like football, or if the NBA were like the NFL, I mean, the Pelicans would have given up on Drew Holiday 4 years ago. I mean, he just would be gone. So it's just a different sport in so many ways. They're over at the age of 27. You've got rookies that are, you know, rookies and second year guys that are retiring because they're afraid of head injuries and stuff. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's just a different sport, and you don't want to look like an idiot if you think that you are giving up too early on a guy when it turns out that he's much more injured than you realize.
Yeah, and something else to take into account here is the guaranteeing of contracts in the NBA versus the NFL just promotes a need more so to take care of your players, because you are in fact stuck with them. You can't just simply cut them. Delvin Bro has $600,000 on his contract guaranteed for this season. I think that's probably below the minimum in the NBA, wouldn't you say so, Ollie?
Yeah, I agree. You know, I still don't know what honestly to make of this, because as you were saying, the Sean Payton had a knee-jerk reaction. But, you know, the way I look at it is, if he reacted as such real quickly, this goes to show you that this isn't just a first instance. This probably happens a lot behind the scenes that doesn't get revealed beyond the players that you listed earlier. I think there's, you know, first of all, the NFL has got to be said. It's a tough sport. It's not just 16 games they play. They put their bodies through hell. It's a good thing their offseason as long as it is, but it's still really not long enough. I mean, look at how long a career in the NFL lasts. And for them to even get past like 5, 6, 7, 8 years is, you know, that's definitely in the minority. So I don't think Sean Payton was necessarily doing the knee-jerk reaction, because let's face it, it's a 16-game season. The need to win, the amount of pressure is huge. Every game, you've got to have every game, and you've got to be able to rely on your troops. So if a coach has an inkling that maybe a player, you know, is kind of pulling a Derrick Rose, and I hate to say Derrick Rose, but supposedly that guy honestly wouldn't play unless he was 110%. Maybe Sean Payton doesn't like those type of guys, so he was calling him out. But thank God that it was revealed that there's a broken bone, and that Sean Payton quickly took all that back. And I think the only thing way for him to save face was to get rid of the doctors. The only interesting thing to me, and I don't think we'll ever learn this, is, but who honestly screwed this up? Was it the actual physician looking at an x-ray that missed it? Or was it somebody below him and he kind of just like signed off on it? Because, you know, these guys have a lot of jobs to do, and especially the guys at the top like Derrick Jones. He probably has to, he's responsible for a lot of things, so he may not look at in depth at everything that he should. So he has to have a group of people he trusts, and maybe somebody in that chain failed. We'll never know. But, you know, bottom line is it just looks bad. And, yeah, I don't know what else to say about that from the Saints' perspective, at least.
It should be noted that Dr. Robert Anderson performed the surgery on Bro this past Thursday in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And Coach Sean Payton said the operation left Bro with a new plate in the bone that's longer than the one that he had implanted last year. He had the same injury last year. I'm not saying that's at all tied to the doctors who performed, like Derrick Jones and Misty Surrey. But what I'm just saying is the timing is all very peculiar after, you know, cutting Daniel Ellerbe so unceremoniously and then publicly calling out Delvin Bro, only to find out it was leaked just hours later, maybe a day, that he was being given a second x-ray and that the injury was thought to be more severe than predicated. And just all of this happening in timing with each other, it just strikes me as very peculiar. And we're going to tie the Saints into the Pelicans now, Ollie. It's damage control time for Sean Payton and the Saints. Yeah. Payton called a team meeting where he instructed the players that their health was his primary concern. And let's talk a bit about Misty. He serves as the orthopedic surgeon for Osher Medical Group, was promoted last summer to serve as the Pelicans' head team physician and the director of medical services. In a release sent to the Associated Press, Oshner stated that Surrey is still with the Pelicans. Dr. Surrey will still remain as the Pelicans' physician, and Oshner Health System will remain an official sponsor of both the Saints and the Pelicans, Oshner said in a statement. And Surrey was brought on after the Pelicans had, I believe, some kind of a record, 351 games lost due to injury. Last year, Anthony Davis played in more games he had ever played. He played in 75, although he left, I want to say, a good number, maybe half a dozen of those games early. But, Ollie, what does it say about Alvin Gentry and the Pelicans now, regardless of Surrey's actual abilities, regardless of who's in the wrong here, if they don't separate themselves from him?
Well, thank God they had last year, you know. The 351 missed games happened 2 years ago, and there was a lot of injury problems before that, as we know. Eric Gordon, and Drew Holiday, and, you know, Tyreek Evans, all our big guns had suffered through a lot. But last year seemed to be one of the healthier ones, and I even wrote about that, as to where, honestly, outside of Dante Cunningham breaking a leg, a lot of the injuries at the missed games happened because of injuries from previous seasons, like with Quincy Pondexter and Tyreek Evans. They have pre-existing conditions, so I don't like to lump that in together. They probably did some irreparable damage, or as Travis said earlier, we just can't guess as to really what's going on, because we know so little of the facts here. So to answer your original question, I'm not that bothered by them needing to supposedly distance themselves from this news, because last year was actually kind of a success. If you want to put that they don't take care of their players, as you mentioned, Anthony Davis was yanked out of a lot of games early, and I swear that guy was getting x-rays left and right. Even if he would, you know, accidentally chip a fingernail tying the shoelaces, I think they did some x-rays on that. So, no, I'm not too worried about moving forward under Misty Series, just simply because of how last year went, how careful they were with the players. And there was so little actual injuries that happened during the season. I don't have an issue, honestly, with Misty Sterry coming back, until we learn more from the Pelicans' perspective. Saints, it's a different story. Derek Jones was in charge. But here under Misty Sterry, I thought they did rather well.
Travis, what's your take?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as Ollie. I just, you know, again, going back to, there's a big difference between what the actual truth is. If we were to be a fly on the wall at the practice facility and in the front office and even in the hospital, you know, having these talks with the various doctors who are all involved in everything, that's one sort of reality that there is. And then the other reality is how it looks to all the New Orleans Pelicans and New Orleans Saints fans and New Orleans sports fans, it sounds like, with Suri being involved in so many of the New Orleans based athletics teams. But I mean, it's just, my main takeaway is just that it looks bad. And I don't know, again, to go back to an earlier point I made, I just don't want to make any like really bad statements about these professional, medical doctors who certainly know much more information than we could ever know. And even Quincy Pondexter has kind of hinted at, like, there's a story that I need to tell once I'm back, and, you know, maybe it'll be once he retires or something. But there's just so much that's kept under wraps that it's really hard to know what the actual real medical truth is.
Travis mentioned Quincy real quick. I want to say this. I'm glad you mentioned Pondexter, Travis, because yeah, he dropped that little bombshell, and supposedly he says he's going to reveal it in a few months' time. And that was back then. So I hope we don't have to wait till the end of his career, because honestly, that would change a lot. If any of his negative, so to speak, around his injury or whatever's been going on with him, if there's anything negative and that stems from the Pelicans organization, yeah, then you know what? We got to do a complete reversal. And this Misty Sterry keeping him on board is going to look really bad. And the only other thing I want to mention is, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but on the day of that news coming out with the misdiagnosis and then the Sean Payton and the Saints, firing the two doctors, Jarrett Jack had a cryptic tweet. And this guy rarely ever tweets. And all he did was, ha, 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 ha. I don't know if you guys remember, he joined us on a 10-day contract or two, and he was coming off ACL injury, and he barely even saw any minutes on the court. I don't know, you know, Jarrett Jack could have been referencing anything, but I've heard from some people say that, no, he was actually taking a shot here at the Saints Pelicans medical staff situation. So, you know, there's some stuff out there that we got to consider. So I would love to know what that was and what Quincy Pondexter. Hopefully he will talk. Hopefully he'll say everything that's on his mind, everything that happened, clear the situation up a little bit.
Ollie, do you think this is the end, or do you think that this stuff is going to continue coming out?
I think it's going to continue coming out. I think since some players have, basically it's going to come out from players they either get scorned. Let's say, for instance, Quincy Pondexter gets traded. Or, you know, heaven forbid, maybe he gets stretched. You know, I don't believe any of that's going to happen. But say something negative happens as to where he ends up in a bad situation, there's not going to be any reason for him to keep, you know, his mouth shut anymore. He can go ahead and open up and say, look, I gave it my all. I entered the playoffs trying to fight for the team back in 14-15. And I haven't been able to get on the court since. And guess what? I've done all my rehab, but it wasn't my fault. And, you know, he could list some screw-ups. For instance, I think wasn't there an infection during one of his surgeries that kind of was a setback for him? So, you know, that reminds me of Keenan Lewis, who claimed there was an infection in one of his surgeries too, that, you know, kind of set back his progress. We don't know anything, but I'm just speculating here on just tidbits of information as I've listed. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else to say about it. We can't presume too much, but yet there's enough suspicion there for us to raise eyebrows.
Yeah, Justin Verrier, who hopefully we'll have on the podcast next month, originally reported on April 13th that Quincy Pondexter was suffering from a knee infection. This is just a few months ago. And this is the most important theme of this that I want to take away. And I'm going to give it to you, Travis. This is the most important season in Pelicans history, in my humble opinion. Not that I'm anybody, but Anthony Davis, you know, he's got this collection around him of Rajon Rondo on a 1-year deal, DeMarcus Cousins on a 1-year deal, Ian Clark. We've just overpaid by all accounts for Jrue Holiday. Alvin Gentry and Dell Demps are on the hot seat. We are on the cusp of either doing something very special or watching it all fall apart. We have an aging owner. We've got a, I don't want to say a dysfunctional front office, but I was going to touch upon how it takes 5 weeks from the end of the season for Mickey Loomis to come out with a statement on Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry. I'll touch on that later. And now we've got this history coming to light of botched surgeries on Brian Young and Chris Chamberlain, as we talked about, Keenan Lewis, as we just mentioned, Quincy Pondexter. These might not tie together. They might just be coincidence. But here's the most important part. If we get into the regular season and this storyline continues and it creates distrust in the locker room, creates media attention, coming back to Misty Suri and Oshner, Travis, how do the Pelicans overcome that?
Win ball games. You know, I think that if they stay relatively healthy and they come out and they, you know, you and I and Trevor kind of dissected the schedule last pod I was on with you. And, you know, if they start out something like, you know, they keep their heads above water, they go 3-3, and then they go, you know, 7-5 in the first 12 or something. And then they start killing it in December and January and February. And if, you know, and I think a lot of people, you know, if you have multiple thoughts about the team, you have kind of a, this is how we're going to look if everything goes good. And this is how we're going to look if everything goes bad. Well, if everything goes good, all these storylines disappear. If they don't win on the floor, now you have time to kind of dissect all the things that happen outside of the 94 feet. And that will be, I think that's always the difference maker. I worked in minor league sports for 3 seasons with the Idaho Stampede, and everything that happened off the floor was so much worse because the team was consistently losing. And that was in minor league sports. I mean, you know, it was the D league. But it still just makes a huge difference. It changes the way people interact with each other. It is the life force behind, you know, the power of the Spurs, for instance, because they know they're going to win 50 games. And so everything else kind of fits into place.
Ali, here's my next point. The softest part of the Pelicans' schedule, I think we'd all agree, touches on January heading into February before the last game, I believe, February 28th versus San Antonio. There are some troublesome spots in October and early November. So this is an opportunity where the Pelicans could come a little slowly out of the gate, and this injury concern could surf. I guess my general question is, wouldn't it be a little bit easier just to replace Misty Suri?
We don't know that. I know that, for instance, the Saints are conducting a wide search, and they're definitely looking outside of Oshner and hiring somebody else. Honestly, I don't even know. Have they hired anybody else yet, guys, or not? I don't think they have.
Not yet. I just deleted a quote from Sean Payton saying that the search was ongoing. They're looking for candidates as we speak.
Okay. Yeah, so the fact that he did well, he's only been there a year. Granted, this is the off season. I just don't think it's that easy replacing Misty Suri. You need somebody locally, somebody that, you know, I'm going to use that word, trustworthy. But if Misty Suri, let's say, for instance, he was in charge of, I don't know, how many x-rays do you think they did on Pelicans last season?
I have no idea.
Let's say 50. Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, let's say for 50. And honestly, there was no issues on any player coming back on the floor. Jrue Holiday's, for instance, his stress reaction never proved a bother. Anthony Davis, he didn't have anything that, you know, some kind of nick turned it up into being a month miss. Nothing went out of whack. Nothing went too awry last season. So, again, that's why I'm basing everything solely for that on that, as to why I honestly don't have a problem with Misty Suri coming back.
Yeah, and we've really never touched on the fact that these are two completely different sports, and the athletes' bodies are used in a variety of different ways. Let's let's move right on along. We've touched on this enough, and I tried to get you guys to panic, and you just wouldn't succumb. So, you know, you guys just ganging up against me, just like you you predicted you would. Let's move along to Frank Jackson. Ollie, you've got an argument up on thebirdrights.com about why, if pressed into action, Duke freshman, I guess point guard, combo guard, maybe, Frank Jackson might be able to contribute sooner than we think. Tell our listeners a bit more about your story.
Sure. I just, you know, I went in with, like any player, I honestly don't know that much about. I just kind of try and just get a, do a lot of research, get a general idea about him and see what the numbers say. I'm not a scout, so looking at a ton of film and saying, oh, he's going to turn out like that, I can't do that. Otherwise, I'd be making a lot more money working a different job. But to be honest with you, Frank Jackson jumps off the page. There hasn't been too many 19-year-olds that enter the league, first of all. I think I had written there's been about 64 in the last 12 drafts, and very few have been picked in the second round. But beyond that, when you compare his numbers, his shooting numbers to all those 19-year-old guards, he's right there behind Kyrie Irving and Devin Booker in terms of not putting the ball through the hoop. And then on his actual abilities, for instance, his jumping ability and sprinting, running, agility, all that stuff, it's right there near number one, and that's unheard of. When I scan through all of these players, including, talk about Bradley Beal. This guy did, you know, he was a top draft pick, great shooter, coming out floor saying he's done nothing to disappoint in Washington. He's had, of course, some injury concerns, but that's not what we're talking about here. He's a great athlete, great shooter, and guess what? He's produced in the NBA. Same thing can be said for Devin Booker. This guy actually has really good agility, and he was a lights-out shooter, and look how well he's doing. Who else is on that list? D'Angelo Russell. But the one, my favorite comparison was Zach LaVine. If you compare their numbers, those guys almost jump just as high, run just as quickly, but Frank Jackson was a heck of a lot better shooter during his freshman season. That just blows my mind then that he ended up going 31st in the draft. The story on him, he's a great scorer. He can get to the free throw line. He can shoot from the outside. His knocks are, he's not the biggest of shooting guards. You had mentioned point guard, Preston, but honestly, he's more of a shooting guard because he honestly showed very little playmaking ability at Duke. So we have to kind of hold that against him until he proves otherwise. And people have knocked on his defense. But again, I mean, what are six men worth? We saw what Lou Williams and Eric Gordon and others last few years, how well they've done in that role. If Frank Jackson could just turn out to be one of those lights out microwaves off the bench, that would be a hell of a find in the second round. So yeah, I got kind of excited about this guy and doing all this research. And like I said, it's hard to say what kind of role he's going to fit in this year because he's fallen in the shoes of so few. The other 19-year-olds that have gone the second round, I mentioned in the article, none of them have been guards. None of those guys performed really well in their freshman years in colleges. And they didn't, display top-tier athleticism at NBA combines. Frank Jackson's an outlier, as there can be. So we honestly have no idea, but the blueprint, the numbers, his athleticism, if you factor all that in, it tells me that if this guy can learn, pick up on the Pelican system, strategies and such, get the coaches or listen to the coaches, and they can get him to do a few good things, I don't see why he wouldn't be able to step in for a team that saw, 10-day contract players coming in and out, being shuffled in and out. And, I think he'd probably fare better than them. So, if we see him, I've heard this argument. Yeah, if we see him, that means there's something going on with the Pelicans season. Either they're tanking or they're, missing a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys sitting out on the sidelines. So that wouldn't be a good thing. But I think if it were to happen, I honestly don't think Frank Jackson would disappoint all that much. Towards the end of the article, I made that comparison to Sheik Diallo. Diallo had no experience. This guy is so fresh to basketball. And it showed between his footwork, his ability to pass, shoot, just play the game. He couldn't do it. And on defense, we've all noted it. He's lost most of the time, but he's really improved. But again, Jackson doesn't need to go through that improvement. He's like already there. He's already got these skills and the size and general understanding. So I don't know. I mean, I think honestly, called upon, I think this guy could actually do a few good things on the court.
Ollie is on the hype train. You forgot to mention his stunning smile, Ollie. But
that's right.
The Pelicans traded their 40th overall pick plus cash considerations to trade up to 31st to select Frank Jackson. He's 6'2", 6'7.5" wingspan, I think. A former five-star recruit, offensive promise and jaw-dropping athleticism like Zach LaVine. 42-inch vertical, averaged over 10 points a game on 54% shooting, 39% from three. We have to mention the stress reaction in his foot, although he did play the entire season on that stress reaction. Travis, the Pels are littered at guard right now with newcomers Ian Clark, Rajon Rondo, and then, of course, Jrue Holiday, Etuan Moore, Frank Jackson, and Jordan Crawford. If I were to tell you today that Jackson received substantial minutes in his first season, would you think that the Pelicans either forfeited the season, the Pelicans were ravaged by injuries and the Oshner thing looms over all of us? Or do you think Jackson's athletic ability immediately vaults him over the likes of Jordan Crawford and Ian Clark?
Yeah, man, that's a good question. I do want to just quickly say that's a great story that Ollie wrote. A lot of research obviously did go into that to compare Frank to all those other 19-year-old draft picks. You know, you and I talked on a few podcasts ago about Frank Jackson, and I'm all on board as well, kind of thinking I compare him potentially to like a Malcolm Brogdon, because I think that he's going to be able to improve his defense and he'll be locked in, and he's not going to get playing time unless he's good at defense. I mean, that's just, you know, that's the way it works in the NBA. So if he gets a lot of playing time this year, I would guess that, because typically most coaches always play veterans over rookies, almost no matter what. The reason that Malcolm Brogdon played a lot last year for the Bucks is that they don't need a true point guard there because they've got Giannis. And in that way, the Pelicans are somewhat similar because they're going to be running a lot of offense through Jrue, who I guess, you know, we're now going to be considering a two, and DeMarcus Cousins. And so I think that you can find ways, assuming these are big time assumptions, but if he does these things, I think he can get on the floor. If Frank Jackson is a versatile defender of both the, well, I guess maybe even three positions, one, two, and three. And if he can do the right things on offense, kind of know where his spots are and what he should be doing, give up the ball a lot. Maybe he makes smart cuts. Maybe he can display some of that athleticism that you see nicely ranked in this story. I mean, he's got incredible measurables. So if he can do the right things on offense and become a positive on the defensive side, he should get minutes. I would love to see that. You know, because I think in a lot of ways he could beat out somebody like Jordan Crawford, who, although he does have a nice skill set in terms of just straight up making shots, maybe his floor game isn't quite as good as Frank Jackson's. That's kind of a leap to make. I mean, the guy is still just 19, so it's really hard to tell. And there's so many guards, like you mentioned, it's hard to imagine him taking away minutes from Etuan Moore and then obviously Holiday and Rondo. But I like him, and I think that if they see him developing really well in practice and stuff, maybe that makes them able to offer up somebody like Etuan Moore in a trade down the line. If they think that they can use him to get a bigger wing, maybe that's a way that they can use him. But Ollie, big ups on the Frank Jackson story. I am also all in.
All right, that's Ollie's enough. Stop kissing Ollie's butt. Okay,
Ollie, you're the man, Preston. You stink.
Go ahead, Ollie.
Yeah, I was answering Travis real quick. Yeah, I was in awe when I talked. I did not expect to write something that's positive, but yeah, it turned out that way. Watch, he's going to turn out to be the biggest disappointment now.
So, he might be Rashad Vaughn. Yeah, like you mentioned, the negative guys who are those 19-year-olds like Rashad Vaughn and Moutier and who else?
Don't forget Xavier Henry.
Yeah,
yeah. But that guy was injury. But yeah, Marcus Teague was. He had great measurables, but the guy couldn't shoot a lick, you know? Pray to God that doesn't happen to Frank Jackson, because as I mentioned in the article, it's going to all come down to his shooting. He's going to have to be able to knock down shots to avoid, you know, kind of falling down that path. But no, Preston, what I really want to quickly touch on is you said it's either going to take injuries or a really bad season for him to see minutes. I could also see, let's say, for instance, maybe the Rajon Rondo experiment doesn't work, and it's maybe not entirely his fault, as to where, you know, he just doesn't work on the court because there's not enough shooters. And then let's say Jordan Crawford, and I love him to death, but He's not been a consistent, Mr. Efficient jump shooter throughout his career. Last season, honestly, was kind of an anomaly for him. So let's just say those couple things happened. That would open the door for Frank Jackson to see minutes.
Yes.
You know, behind Drew Holiday, Ian Clark, and Etuan Moore, you're going to need another guard. So I can see another scenario as to where he could maybe find some minutes.
How dare you? I am appalled at how easily you both dispatch of Michael Jordan Crawford. What has come over both of you? I'm so shamed by these comments. You guys, let's move right along. Let's pretend like that didn't happen. Shams reported Quinn Cook signed a partially guaranteed 2-year contract with the Atlanta Hawks. Ali, are you shedding any tears?
Yeah, because I honestly like the guy. I think he can contribute. But I think the way the Pelicans offseason worked out, I'm not surprised. They got Rajon Rondo, so we don't need another handler on the roster. They signed Ian Clark, so there you go. There's like the dead-eye shooter. And then you've got Frank Jackson in the wings, who's like Quinn Cook, but a hell of a lot faster and a better jumper. And, you know, he's more NBA ready. So, honestly, Quinn Cook kind of got squeezed by the roster the Pelicans were able to assemble. But that said, I think this guy is going to be in the NBA. He's a quality NBA player. We saw him in the summer league. This guy was consistent from game in to game out. And I know it's a summer league, but honestly, just to run a team, knock down jumpers, that's what you're kind of asked to do as a backup point guard. He nailed it. So I think the Hawks made a good signing.
Travis, any memories of Quinn Cook you'd like to disclose?
No, I don't have any long-lasting memories of Quinn Cook. No, but he's a nice player, and I don't have the same Atlanta hatred as many of our of our fans and maybe you two do. So I don't mind him going there. I think Atlanta is not going to be very good, though, so they need to find a way to get better.
Careful. We don't want to lose any of our Atlanta-based listeners. All right, that's all the time we have today. We've got the Saints' second preseason game tonight against the Chargers. This is a Sunday night we're recording this, as well as episode 6 of Game of Thrones. Travis, people are predicting a Snowshins 11-type atmosphere on tonight's episode. Give us your prediction for tonight's super team-up.
Yeah, so somebody's got to die in the big fight against the, well, not even that big of a fight, because there's only like, what, 10 guys going out there?
Not even 8.
Yeah,
oh, and then some background actors.
Yeah, so maybe, I was thinking the guy who in the preview from last week, he made his sword turn into a big flame, like essentially like that Star Wars thing, whatever that's called.
A lightsaber.
Yeah, a lightsaber but with fire. But I think that guy's going down.
That's Thoros of Mir and Beric Dondarrion. Each of them can make their swords aflame.
Oh man.
So that's a poor prediction, is basically what I'm saying, Travis.
Sorry.
Unless you think they're both going down.
Let's say both. Yeah, they're both going down.
All right, a hot take. And I can just guarantee right now, all those poor background guys carrying all the supplies, they're all goners. Just rest easy on those.
Enjoy.
Remember, you guys can follow Travis at Trebeta, Ali at Red Hopeful, and all things Pelicans at our home on thebirdrights.com. Ali, what have we got coming up on the site this week?
Got a lot. I sent out a bunch of roundtable questions that I hope you guys answer and send them back to me so we can have lots of good, fun content. We'll leave it at that. I'm still working on, I'm hoping to get my historical perspective and why it favors the Pelicans on making a postseason. I'm pretty sure I'll get it done by tomorrow. If not, then Tuesday at the latest.
All right, good stuff. We'll be back on Tuesday as well with Ali and Kevin Berrios, a hot new episode, so stay tuned for that. But for now, thank you, guys. Travis, would you like to say goodbye?
Thanks for having me, Preston, and Ali, you're the man. You know, you're a beautiful man, and Preston, I can't say the same for you.
Shameful, shameful. Ali, thank you as always. And you guys, let's go Pels.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? a woo-hoo-er, a hand clapper, a high-fiver. I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.